Kia ora, Ko Fusmataho. Nau mai ki te whare, welcome to the House. A couple of weeks ago, Parliament commemorated the 35th anniversary of the legalisation of consensual gay sex in New Zealand. LGBTQI flags were raised in front of Parliament in a dawn event, followed by a panel discussion with some of the people closely involved in the campaign. In the House today, we hear from two at the very centre of it all, former MP Fran Wild and current Speaker Trevor Mallard. Both of them spent a fair bit of time acknowledging various people and groups and talking about wider issues, but with limited time, in this edited version, we are focusing on the political and parliamentary tactics. First up, Fran Wild.
I just want to talk a little bit about the strategy that we used, because this is very important for other issues as well. So this was actually about changing public opinion. What we had was a public that had been brought up to think of gay men in particular, but also lesbians, as being perverted child molesters. That was the stereotype that a lot of New Zealanders had. So this was a public education campaign. We needed the public in certain electorates to understand what this huge human rights black hole meant for New Zealand, and to give their members of parliament permission to vote for it. When the bill was introduced, in those days they had a gentleman's agreement, and it was a gentleman's agreement because there weren't many women in parliament, it was mainly men still, that any private member's bill, as they were called then, was always given a first reading. So it was, nothing was voted down on the first reading. It was given a sporting chance, and then it would disappear forever in the select committee. And at the time it was given the sporting chance, we knew that we had 19 votes absolutely that would go right through to the third reading, which wasn't very many, certainly wasn't enough. So we then divided the MPs into different groups. So there were the ones that were lost causes, we would never get them to vote for us. But mainly we focused on those in a middle group that we knew probably wanted to vote for it but were too scared politically to do that. So we focused on them, and it was those electorates that we focused the campaign on. Campaign was massive and much work had been done. For our campaign, we needed to bring all those groups together plus find other allies. So we went to the religious groups that were supportive, we went to health people, we went to education people, and we put together groups and work programs in the electorates of the MPs that we were targeting. We needed the opinion leaders in those electorates to actually say to those MPs, it's okay for you to vote for this bill. Actually, we want you to. So we ran the campaign out of the whip's office. My caucus had made the terrible mistake of making me one of their whips to keep me out of cabinet, which actually was good. It was because had I been in cabinet, I wouldn't have been able to do this bill. So actually, in retrospect, it was probably quite a good thing. And the whip's office was also very handy. It gave me a lot of information that I needed. But we ran a campaign out of there, and it was kind of like conducting the orchestra, you know, not just for what we were talking about in Parliament and maybe to our colleagues, but what was happening around the country. There was a massive media campaign, radio, print media, television when we could, speeches, meetings, rallies. I didn't go to rallies because it was thought unsafe. Generally getting out as much as we could. There was no social media, and I say hallelujah to that. I mean, don't get me going on social media. It's such a destructive thing, I think, now, particularly for young people. And we did not have to contend with social media, which made it much easier, actually. The idea was to change the stereotype view of gay men. What we needed was visibility. The real heroes of this campaign were the gay men who came out during the campaign. They were criminals. Many of them would have been in danger of losing their jobs and losing their friends and a whole lot of other sanctions. They actually put their personal safety on the line to come out. AIDS had emerged, and the antis used that as a reason for not doing gay law reform. We used it as a reason for doing it because we knew that gay men would not present for health checks if they were criminals. So every time the bill was in the House, which was every Wednesday, for a long, long time, we needed to make sure all our votes were there. It was exhausting, frankly. This was a cross-party issue. This was not a Labour Party thing. There were people in the Labour caucus who voted against it, and there were many Nats who were very supportive of it. And I particularly want to acknowledge Catherine O'Regan, who did a lot of work One of the things about being whip was that I ran the leave book, so I knew who was going to be away. And that was really helpful. And we organised for the aunties to be invited to obscure places in New Zealand every Wednesday. I don't know. I'm not sure whether they realised what was going on after they'd been invited to, you know, the far north or Stewart Island or something on a Wednesday, funnily enough, to talk to some local group. I can say that now. A long time has passed, but it was pretty handy, actually. So the committee stages were probably the most difficult because that was when they tried to change the words. And one of the big issues, of course, was the age of consent. A lot of MPs who were kind of not quite there said, oh, well, if you just change it to 18 or 20, I'll vote for it. I went back to the gay community and said, you know, this is what I've been told. And they said, nope, 16 or nothing. It's got to be absolutely equal. And I came back and said to my parliamentary colleagues, it's 16. Interestingly, in the committee stages, the people opposed to the bill voted for 16 for an age of consent because they thought that nobody would, in their right mind, would vote for a third reading for the bill with their age of consent of 16. So we got what we wanted in terms of the age of consent. I suppose I should talk about the petition. It was the most terrible time, and they had this kind of Nuremberg rally on the steps of Parliament, which actually worked against them because people said, oh my God, you know, we've got this in New Zealand. Kids in uniforms, religious hymns, kind of almost military overtones. It was really, really bad. Biggest petition ever, but Trevor led a group of people who went through every single page, and we found many of them were just fraudulent.
Mickey Mouse signed
many times, and that of course was people who had been forced to sign in a group, and they didn't want to, but they just signed any old name. There were huge issues then about things like rape and marriage and, you know, domestic violence, etc. And the same people who opposed gay law reform also opposed all of those changes, and it was almost like this was the pivot. I was looking back on it, think our society was going to go one way or the other. Mm. And thank God we went this way, because frankly that opened the way for a lot of other things, but also it meant that some things that we had already achieved were not pushed back, particularly the fundamentalist Christian lobby, who were quite strong, and in the case of the gay law reform bill, were funded from the US, and they had speakers over here, and it was a big campaign. They would have just moved in a big wave across a whole lot of other issues as well, and that would have set New Zealand society back hugely. So that was a later realisation during the campaign where I began to see there are other things at stake here too, actually, and they were linked for sure. And that's about how society manages itself and how it sees itself and what it wants its political leadership to do to reflect that. So it was really, really important. In Parliament, Trevor and Ruth Dyson, who wasn't in Parliament then, were actually the key people who ran the campaign. And we had a number of our colleagues who are really staunch supporters. Annette, Judy Keel. Look, I'm not going to talk about everybody, but I do want to mention Catherine O'Regan, who later on got through the human rights side of the bill. Have we got to where we want to yet? No, we haven't. We actually, I think, are much more tolerant than we used to be, and I mean the makeup of the Parliament now is tribute to that, but frankly, we are far from being instinctively tolerant, I think, in a lot of areas, okay? And I particularly, at the moment, think we have to do something more organised, and this means the state, in schools. I think kids are still being picked on and bullied, and it's really tough for them. When we did this, we didn't see many trans people. We realise now that much more, I think, that sexuality is just a spectrum and people should be able to be what they want to be. But I do want to acknowledge those guys who came out publicly. A lot of them were in public roles, and actually it made a huge difference. So thank you all for celebrating this morning. 35 years does seem a long time ago, but actually there is still more to do. So we haven't finished yet.
I was one of those marginal seat MPs. Mm. One of the in those days we didn't have lists. People were voted in and out, and we're all told that we were, you know, not only going to go to hell but lose our seats as well. We had a lot of pressure at home. I had by then a 4 and 5 year old, because the campaign went on for about 18 months. My baby would answer the phone and people would say just obscene things to her, and it was just awful. We got the solution in the end, and it involved a whistle. And we gave her a list of words, and if anyone said any of those words, she blew this high-pitched whistle in the phone. And we worked out there must have been a limited group of people because those phone calls dropped away. My role was mainly to do numbers. I worked as an accountant. We didn't have proper computers for spreadsheets in those days. We had division lists and coloured felt tip pens. And we had series and series and series of these on the different issues. But Fran's never been good at numbers. You know, she was a very optimistic person. And at times we did need to, you know, be absolutely realistic to make sure that we were going to get the numbers. It became obvious quite early that the human rights part of the bill would not succeed. As Fran said, it later went through, sailed through the parliament when Catherine O'Regan promoted it, I think 6 or 7 years later. But what that meant was that there was nothing in there which was of any assistance to the lesbian community at all. So after that, it was like goodwill on the part of the lesbian community that helped keep the coalition going together. And I think that was something which was, you know, incredibly appreciated and not that straightforward. Fran again indicated there was a number of people who voted for different ages, for 18 and for 20. Some of the people deeply believed in it, and others saw that as a cover. Within the 18 and 20 voters, there were people who really wanted it to go through at 16, but felt like this could be something that they could do to give a signal that they weren't quite as radical to their communities. Several of whom did it with our permission. You know, we worked it through, worked with them, and we knew we had the numbers, and so we said, in the interest of getting the legislation through overall in a package and people in good shape, it was okay to do that.
In the committee stage.
In the committee stages. Came back for the third reading. We knew absolutely we were going to win by 3. Fran had been told, and you know, she kept on telling me, and I didn't rely on it, that we were getting an extra one. Effectively, we were told a proxy vote. There was someone who had organised, someone who had not been voting in the general direction of passing the legislation through much of the legislation, suddenly turned up in the Ayres lobby on the night. And that was, you know, that made the difference between 3 and 5, you know, plus 1, -5. We also had two National Members of Parliament whose electorates were strongly opposed to it, but who had family members, brothers, I think, in both cases, who were gay. And they indicated that they were not prepared to see the legislation fail. They went to the end of the lobby and waited for a signal that the legislation was going to pass, and then went and voted against it. What I'm trying to say in this is that for people involved, it was hard. It was awful politics. Fran might have built communities around the country who were supportive. I don't think we ever got above 32% support in the polls for the passing of the bill. This was a bill that was, at the time, not wanted by the majority of New Zealanders. it was a matter where Fran and I think you haven't mentioned Michael Cullen, who was Michael Cullen, who was actively involved. Ruth not only helped run the campaign, she sort of ran Fran's house in order to, you know, looked after the kids and made sure there was food and all of that sort of stuff to free Fran up to do the work, because Fran was the person who could convince people. And then there was Catherine O'Regan, who was the liaison into the National Party. There's an education into how Parliament worked, there's an education into people, but what has happened since, the freedom to be oneself that has flowed from that, for me, has just been absolutely fantastic. Thank you.
That was first Fran Wild and then Trevor Mallard talking about the passing of the Homosexual Law Reform Act 35 years ago. You've been listening to The House. E te whakarongo koe ki te whare. This program is produced with funding from Parliament. Mā tū wā.